Our final speaker of the day is Dr. Matthew Bachetta. Dr. Bachetta is the H. William Scott Chair in Surgery. He's also an Associate Professor of Surgery within the Department of Thoracic Surgery at Vanderbilt University, and he's going to speak today about pulmonary embolism.
Okay, well, this will be a little bit different than the talks that you've already heard, and I always have to bat clean up. It's hard to follow Jay and every other speaker here because they've actually all given great informative talks. So I have no disclosures at all, and I understand the pain that Dr. Swishenberger evinced about this. So very briefly, some history. First book published on pulmonary embolectomies or pulmonary embolism was 1880. And then in 1908, Trendelenburg did the first pulmonary embolectomy, but the first successful one was done by Kushner in 1924, so it took us a little while to get there. Then John Gibbon came along and actually changed cardiothoracic surgery and surgery in general when he developed a lot of the ideas that led to cardiopulmonary bypass as well as extracorporeal oxygenation. And we finally used that to do our first successful one on bypass in 1961. In the 70s, we started to use lysis for other treatment options. So what do you do to treat PEs in 2018? This is sort of the short list of things. You're going to use some form of anticoagulation, thrombolysis, or catheter-based interventions. There's surgical embolectomy, ECMO, or some combination of the above. Now, when trying to make a decision about what you're going to do, you have to keep a close idea of what the outcomes and prognosis are with these patients. And clearly, patients that provide in worse physiologic status, cardiogenic shock, severe right heart failure, are more likely to die. And that's seen in a summary here published by these two groups. And you can see that overall, for massive pulmonary embolism, you're expecting or can expect to see a 20 to 60 some percent mortality, and in patients that you're resuscitating, that's going to be upwards of 65%. Even in submassive PEs, there's still a very high mortality associated with it. The ESC published some guidelines on the management of acute PEs, and they were looking for markers to promulgate for the community and for risk stratification of these patients. And clinical markers, obviously, shock and hypotension are important clinical markers. Markers of RV dysfunction from echo data, where you have a severely dilated and poorly functioning RV. BNP data and markers of myocardial injury utilizing troponins. And this is very important. This certainly helps guide my decision making when looking at patients that I've been called to evaluate for pulmonary embolism, and looking at RV dysfunction, troponins, and BNP. Now, this is a bit of an eye chart, and I apologize for it. The most important point here is that hemodynamically unstable patients with PE really need to have an aggressive intervention right away. Don't delay. It's kind of like a abdominal compartment syndrome. You delay, you're going to have more mortality. This just gets to basically the physiology of shock, and you want to avoid that. If they're relatively stable, you have more time to make decisions about what you're going to do. But if there is persistent RV dysfunction or evidence of necrosis with elevated troponins, again, you need to be more aggressive. MGH has been very aggressive in promulgating the idea of a PERT team, which is a pulmonary embolism rapid response team. They've been on the forefront of this, and there's been a big push nationally and internationally to do this. This is really an extension of a multidisciplinary collaboration of people from different fields to try and optimize the care for these patients. So we're going to go into some cases. I call this the case of the young patient, 36-year-old woman, no past medical history. She had been driving a very long trip, literally all day, all night. And following a road trip, she noticed that she had some swelling of the left lower extremity. She goes to the emergency room, and they gave her muscle relaxants. That didn't work out very well. She had continued shortness of breath, and then she had a pre-syncopal episode in her shower. She goes back to the ED, and on physical exam, she's looking worse. She's got a troponin, and she gets a CTA, and she's got a bilateral PE. So here are some of our treatment options. Obviously, supplemental oxygen, heparin for sure, and then maybe are we going to think about catheter-based lysis, full-dose lysis, pulmonary embolectomy. And this is a CT scan. You can see that there's distal clot bilaterally. We ended up going with a catheter-based approach. And in pretty short order, she was feeling pretty well, and her saturations are back to 98% on room air with marked improvement in the RV. And these catheters are placed both the right and left and deliver TPA along with an ultrasonic device to help theoretically break up this clot. This is a case of the high index of suspicion. He's a 62-year-old guy, previous smoker, and he just had prostate surgery not too long ago. He comes in, he's short of breath, chest pain. I mean, this is a very typical presentation. And he started on vasopressors. He's given volume resuscitation. He's on a non-rebreather. He's sitting 80%. And while we're doing the echo, he'd also gotten a CTA very quickly, and he's got a saddle pulmonary embolism. His RV is like deteriorating essentially in front of us, positive troponin, high BNP, and he's got popliteal thrombus. We just ultimately take this saddle embolism to the OR. He essentially decompensates as we wheel him into the OR, but you know, we're in the operating room, we're able to get him on very quickly. We do an embolectomy, we put in a temporary IVC filter for that popliteal thrombus, and he does very well. Post-operatively, because really this is a physical obstruction. You remove the obstruction and all of a sudden you don't have a roadblock, and believe it or not, the heart and the body really likes that. And he's actually home in 5 days, and he does well, returns to his normal ADLs. So what do you do in pregnancy? So you have a 39-year-old woman, she comes in and she's 24 weeks pregnant. She's been trying to get pregnant for years, and IVF finally works, and now she's in the ER with acute shortness of breath, near syncope. She's got chest pain, she's tachycardic, she's sitting 85% on 100% non-rebreather, dilated RV with some septal bowing, bilateral PE on CTA, and there's a little mild fetal distress. So what are your management options? Well, heparin, ECMO, catheter-based lysis, pulmonary embolectomy. Nobody wants to give systemic TPA for the obvious reasons, because she's adamant that she's not going to lose this pregnancy. And we decided to combine approaches a little bit. We just put her on ECMO while she was awake with local, and then we took her a while after that to make sure she wasn't going to decompensate from there, and did a half dose, because we were chickens, of catheter-based lysis. And she actually got better very quickly, and after 5 days was able to come off, and she had essentially a near normal echo. She obviously continued on her anticoagulation. She delivered her baby at 40 weeks, a very healthy baby, and she continues to do well. Now, this is the case of what I call a simple PE. 28-year-old woman, she's on OCPs, she's a smoker, she's not active, she's obese, doesn't really do much. She presents to the emergency room after a syncopal episode in the ER. They call it a peri-arrest, and they just gave a big dose of TPA, and they said she had a remarkable return of vital signs, and she's transferred for higher level of care. She has a CTA that says that there's clot that's worse on the right than the left. The RV still looks terrible. There's a 6-centimeter RV thrombus, elevated troponin, BNP, Dopplers are negative. Well, she's very decompensated, and she has near complete obstruction of her RVOT, and she has a PFO with thrombus in transit. So this decision becomes pretty easy, that we're going to take her to the operating room. And we cannulate her, we go on, we close the PFO, we take care of the RVOT thrombus, and then we find a whole bunch of chronic clot. And that's not a great thing when you think you're doing a PE and then you're doing a PTE. But that's what the RVOT thrombus looked like, very well organized, it was cannulized, and she was alive somehow. But this is what she really had, which was a little distracting. So everybody thought she was coming here for a PE, and actually she had CTEF. So it's very easy to get distracted. You think that you've got the diagnosis, you don't. She actually did very well, but I think there's some hard lessons that you have to learn here. One, she had already had prior episodes of shortness of breath. Her exercise tolerance had gotten worse over time, and she actually knew that she had a protein S deficiency. So maybe asking the right questions would have helped plan this operation. The TPA may or may not have helped. There was some question about whether this was a real arrest or not. And preparation matters. Now, we happen to be in the operating room with a team that also does PTEs, so we just continued on and did that. This is a sort of the mystery PE case. It's a 40-year-old fit woman. This is really in great shape, it would seem, right? She travels a lot for work. She's on OCPs, but but she stopped running about 6 months ago because she just didn't feel like running. She's a former marathoner. And of course, she goes to the ER with all the standard symptoms. She's got a SAT that keeps vacillating between 86 and 94%. The CTA is read as positive for PE, and this hospital sends her to another hospital to go get a pulmonary embolectomy. And when they're there, they find out that she doesn't actually have much acute disease. They did an intraoperative echo. They said, nope, yep, she's got a PFO, so we'll close that. And then they can't come off pump. So they call us for an ECMO transport. We went there, we put the patient, converted the patient to ECMO, brought him over, and we stabilized her just to make sure that she was okay. And then we took her to the OR for what we thought was probably CTEF. And that's what she really had. She had a subacute PE on top of chronic disease. This was a misinterpreted CTA. Again, you really need to have multiple eyes on the CT scan. So she does very well. She's a healthy woman otherwise. She's actually back to running, and she has a normal echo. And then, of course, there's the duration of anticoagulation that you're going to use. I say lifelong. Other people tend to still abbreviate that. But for her, I would do lifelong. So again, history matters. She had a chronicity of symptoms. This was a very active person who slowed down over weeks to months. She had a change in her lifestyle. The patient was symptomatic, but she was stable, and that gives you time to complete a more thorough evaluation. And you need to think about that. And basically, you don't want to show up to the gunfight with a knife. I mean, they thought that they were going to be doing a pulmonary embolectomy when this woman actually needed a pulmonary thromboendarterectomy, and they are very different operations. And so you'd like to be in a place where you can do that if necessary. This is sort of the case of combination therapy. This patient came in actually this weekend. She's status post to Whipple for an insulinoma. She's 3 weeks post-op, and she presents the ER, again, short of breath, chest pain, near syncope, tachycardic, tachypneic. Blood pressure is 80 over 50. They've resuscitated her with some fluid. They decide to do a CTA. It's a massive PE. Her troponin is very elevated. Her BNP is almost 7,000. Echo looks terrible. And she's got a gas of 7, 3, 2, 38, and 50. She started on heparin bolus, and she continues to decompensate. She's on levo or norepinephrine, and that's going up. And our options right now are lysis, OR, or ECMO. And we're just trying to, we're thinking, let's just stabilize her. Again, we cannulate her awake. We do not intubate her. A lot of people wanted to intubate this patient. That usually leads to an arrest because they do not do well with induction and then positive pressure ventilation. So again, we treated her awake. Her vasopressors almost came off completely. Her SaO2, though, remained low despite the FiO2 increase. And this is the primary reason. This is classic Harlequin syndrome. As you can see, she still has antegrade flow through the left ventricle, and what you end up doing is, though the lower body is well oxygenated, the coronaries and the carotids are not, because they're seeing a very hypoxic blood from the lungs. So what do you do here? You've got options. So you could convert her to a hybrid configuration where you go to a VAV ECMO. You can continue your heparin, obviously. You can take her for catheter-based therapy, or you go forward with a pulmonary embolectomy. And that's what we did yesterday. And the nice thing is, again, it's a big obstruction. And when you remove the obstruction, they get better. And so that part of it physiologically can be gratifying. But what you need to understand is that sometimes you have to be able to pull the trigger on increasing the level of intervention. She got her diagnosis, started on heparin immediately. She was failing therapy. She needed something more. And we put her on awake VA ECMO. We ultimately decided to take her to the operating room. She's extubated and doing well, and hopefully we'll have her to the floor today or tomorrow. But that's sort of the approach that you take with these patients. Now, I was asked by one of the moderators to do something other than PEs. So I'm going to discuss this case very quickly. This is a patient that we had last week, and a 49-year-old woman, COPD, some question about severe asthma. And she presents to the ER with acute worsening of shortness of breath. She quickly deteriorates, and they just intubate her. So her labs are not wildly out of whack, but she's positive for adenovirus. And you see by her chest x-ray, it's really not that bad. I mean, you know, if you work in this field and you look at that x-ray, you go, well, it's not great, but you know what? For us, it's actually not that bad. But she's failing standard of care, you know, but she's getting standard of care. She's getting steroids, the beta agonist, they've got her antibiotics to cover her, she's paralyzed. But her gas is 7.2, 85, 75, and that's on a bicarb drip because she's dipping down to 7.05 on her pH. And her peak AWER pressures are over 55. They were over 60 at one point, even despite the fact that she's on a tidal volume down as low as 4 cc's per kilo. They called for an ECMO transport. We just put her on VV ECMO and turned the tidal volume down to 1 cc just for transport purposes. And try to just to normalize the ABG so we get her off that bicarb drip. And our management goals right now are supportive. We'll wean the ECMO as tolerated and we'll consider extubation, probably to high flow nasal cannula. But the real thing is we try and get these patients off of ventilators as soon as possible because of a VAP on top, ventilatory associated pneumonia on top of this type of COPD exacerbation or status asthmaticus really increases the mortality associated with these patients. So in summary, patient history still matters. It really made a difference in many of the cases that I've seen, and I'm sure it will in yours. But team decision-making is critical as well because I think it provides an opportunity to optimize outcomes. Be flexible on your multiple treatment options, and combination therapy is something that is available to us in 2018. As far as the surgical part, as a surgeon, I can tell you that pulmonary embolectomy in 2018 has good outcomes, especially if you have a team that's trained to handle it. I perform all of these beating heart. I do not arrest the heart because I like to avoid cardioplegia in a stunned heart. I think it just is harder for it to recover. You just completely decompress it when you're on pump anyway. The vent strategy is don't intubate these patients if you don't have to. That can lead to a devastating outcome and you may find yourself intubating and doing chest compressions at about the same time. And then always be prepared for something more than just a simple PE. It gets back to the first point, know your history of the patient. Thank you.